Welcome to the March 4th CDC Community Development Committee meeting. I'd like to ask staff to do roll call, please.
Councilwoman Miles.
Here.
And then as the alternate is Mayor Rossini.
Present.
I'd like to make a motion to approve the minutes from February 4th.
As a matter of course, I was not here for that meeting. I have reviewed the minutes.
It's okay for you. You're all right.
Okay. I'm happy to second that. Unless you prefer an abstention.
No, we can't get a vote if you don't. Doesn't count.
I've read it. It does seem to make sense.
At this time, I'd like to open the floor to public comment for anything that is not on the agenda this evening. Does that apply to anybody? Nope. Then moving on to new items, A, conditional use permit 9222 Loma Street. Would you mind giving the staff report?
Sure. Briefly, the property currently has a single-family detached home with a garage, attached garage, and what the property owner wants to do is to add to this home. Specifically, they want to add an office, a half bath, and garages to accommodate vehicles, eight vehicles, and an RV vehicle. To make it clear, in the floor plan that you have, there are three garages, and each of the smaller garages can accommodate up to four parking spaces. So the cars can be arranged in a tandem fashion. So there's two of those, and then you have a larger, longer garage that would accommodate an RV vehicle. So from a street view, you'll see is two sets of double garage doors and then a single door at the end for the RV spaces. So in a nutshell, basically that's what's being proposed. It meets all of the development standards, setbacks, lot coverage, maximum building height. Myself, staff, the rest of staff, and Craig, who's here this evening, we went back and forth a couple of visits to make sure that this project meets all of the development standards. So I'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
So it does actually, there are two. I think it's a number of parking places and the height of the garage doors, right?
That's correct.
And all three garage doors are over 8 feet. Therefore, all three would be an issue for a CUP.
That's correct.
And how high?
Two over 8 feet.
I've got 10-foot ceiling on here. Is the opening is only 8 feet?
The opening is only 8.
Okay, great. Thanks for clarifying that.
Mm-hmm. How high do they want the... How much above the 8 feet?
14 foot
high.
For a single. For the RV garage, it's 14 feet, but the other two garages are 8 feet.
Oh, they're still 8 foot. Oh, so it's only one.
Yeah,
then.
It's only one. I misread the plans. That's my fault. So we got... Door height of 8 and then 14.
Okay. Do we have any questions
but
or comments?
But as written, the current code says anything that's 8 feet or more. Would mm-hmm. require a conditional use permit.
Okay.
So it does qualify then because it's 8 feet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's part and parcel of the CUP process.
I know we're going to be handling an amendment to this issue in the future. Mm-hmm. Is the standard typically now 8 feet, or is it a 7 foot standard?
Yeah, you know, I contacted a couple of garage companies, and they do say between 7 and 8 is what the typical requests are for folks that want to replace their garage door.
Okay.
But they did say that they're, because of the popularity of these high profile vehicles, SUVs and such, they're getting more requests for taller garage doors.
Right, it seems more commonplace.
Yes.
So, okay.
So we are recommending approval.
Okay.
Is there any comment by that? Yes.
I would like to comment. As I see the project, this looks like a large parking lot, like a strip mall. Notice parking lot all over, 14 foot high, and that's 8. How is this going to look like? This is a residential area. What do you mean, 8 additional parking lots? How many people would be coming in and out every day, 3 hours? I do not believe in Apple, but I see that you are good at following them.
Those are some excellent questions. Is the homeowner allowed to answer?
Yes, so you can, that's why they're here. So,
have you seen the plans?
Selling a shopping center, a strip mall, what is that?
Are you the homeowner?
Yes.
Yes.
Would you mind addressing that?
You want to see these? I collect cars and Jeeps.
Thanks, ma'am.
So I don't drive them every day, but I collect cars. And I think most people who would have that many cars, I mean, the house is 2,500 square feet. It's not a huge house. It's not like there's going to be multiple families living there. It's primarily just because I have Jeeps and cars and toys and things that I like. So I don't think it's a traffic issue. I think the other thing is that we tried to make the street view of it look just like a house with two-car garage plus an RV garage. And there are other homes in Villa Park that have a similar street presentation. I have one down the street from me. And it doesn't seem to me to be out of place. The eight cars, because they're long garages, that's not visible to the street. I don't think it would be visible to anybody, really.
So from the front, it just looks like...
From the front, it looks like
two-car garage with an RV garage.
And I don't think we'd have any traffic concerns because I'm really just a car collector.
Did you...
Is there any house in Villa Park approved for 9 spaces plus the 4 we have? Any house like that?
There's
two
other homes that have the same
frontage.
Yeah.
It's the front part, whether or not they can fit 5 cars in there, I don't think that that's something the city can regulate if they're fitting 5 cars head to toe, head to toe, head to toe. I know there's a few families in Villa Park that have
the car. We just approved the car residence, as you recall, that had I don't know how many places.
I know there's a few residents that have long garages with...
The 19162 Mesa,
mm-hmm. Yes,
is almost identical to what we're building, and they also have parking on the other side of those garages,
right.
Too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what their total garage space is, but I would surmise it's probably about the same.
Is that the house off Mesa and Crestview?
Right on the corner there, yep. Across from the horse corral.
Right, Mesa and Crestview, yep.
Yeah, because they have parking on not only the side that we see, but they have garage on the other side as well.
I think their RV garage is even taller.
Yeah.
Does the Ferris project have two-car garages,
yes.
Plus the RV?
Yes.
So that's another project.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as unique as one would think. If it's done correctly, it blends in well, and that's why it may not be so noticeable.
So a residential house with 13-car garage.
But this is 9, I think.
That's what you say, not unusual.
Pardon me?
Not what?
Not unusual.
Not unusual. It's becoming much
19,
more...
14 cars? 9. 8 cars.
You have 4, you are in 8 or 9.
So maybe we can show him where the cars go.
So, if I may.
Yeah.
Sure. So this is a standard 2-car garage. This is a standard 2-car garage, except it's twice as deep. This is obviously an RV garage. And then you can see from that overview how deep it is, how this is twice as deep as normal. And it's twice as deep as normal. But from the front, it looks like your standard.
So it will not be possible to even pull out that front row without pulling out the back row.
You have to pull out a car to
so
take out.
So from a traffic perspective, it's almost impossible to have all cars pull out at once.
Yeah.
It would physically be an impossible.
So how big is this lot? How big is the lot?
Almost an acre.
Two-thirds, I think it is, 0.66.
It's 28,826
square. I don't think it's a problem. You may find it fine, but for a residential, like Villa Park, I drive to Loma to get to my house every day. I particularly believe that you should have both. It is just an excessive number of cars, it's excessive height. No matter what you say, that they're going to be stuck one after the next. They're going to have to be moved. There's going to be more pollution, more car work. I don't know how you possibly think that this is happening.
Well, we appreciate your comments, and it is noted. Are there any other comments?
I don't have any.
I do like to add before we move on to the next item that I did receive a call from a neighbor at 9191 Loma Street, Steve and Eileen Yolin, Y-O-E-L-I-N, who also opposed the project. He was just concerned about the I guess the appearance of it from the street.
But I believe there was letters of support, weren't there?
They signed it and said that they were for it, so I'm confused. Because I took the plans to them, and I showed it to them, and we discussed it.
Is that you, Mr. Yellen?
No, I am Sergio Stone. I live in States Drive.
Okay.
I talk with my neighbors, my friends around, and unfortunately, at 4 o'clock in the morning, I am the only one that is tired. Everybody was.
We brought 9 letters in of support.
Yes.
I wouldn't believe it. I wouldn't believe it that somebody would build that kind of a parking lot. Ours, as you see. We have a parking lot here.
Is it possible to maybe revisit the neighbors with the plan so that they can have a clearer image? It sounds like
perhaps we could revisit the one
we showed them the plans.
This meets the ratio of house size to lot size, correct?
Yes.
It's underneath 33%.
It's a fairly large lot, so yeah, that's one of the first things that we looked at was the compliance with development standards, and yeah, it more than meets all of that. Setback, building height requirement, all of that stuff.
Okay. Well, this has to go to full council, irrespective of what happens.
So we would ask for a recommendation from this group on the 26th. They'll go to the full council for approval of the CUP. But typically, we would get a recommendation from the CDC regarding this request. And staff, again, are recommending approval.
I don't have a problem moving this to the full council for further review. I think it is advisable that as much support as possible and clarity can be obtained from the residents, because it sounds like we have a phone call saying one thing, a letter saying another thing. I think that's always advisable. We had the same issue, I think, with the Ferris, the Ferris RV garage. Mm-hmm. But given what I'm hearing from staff, I appreciate your comment, sir, but they legally have met their requirements. I would move that this matter move forward to full council.
I second that. So you'll have an opportunity to appear again at the city council meeting this month on the 26th?
Yes.
And just as, out of an abundance of caution and full transparency, I do know the Sarkaria family, but it's a very small community. It's a very small town. Anytime you run for office, you're typically going to walk every single street and get to know a lot of people. But I would treat them the same way that, and my track record as a councilperson speaks volumes of that, as I would anybody else. But I want to put that on record that they are known to me. But nonetheless, I am judging this matter on its merits. So.
Thank you. So do you understand?
So there will be a public hearing on the 26th, and that public hearings, the meeting starts at 6:30 in the evening. Public hearings is going to be after 7 o'clock in the range of 7 to 8 that will be heard. That's just a ballpark. The 26th of March?
Tuesday.
Is that 2 weeks from tomorrow? I think it's
what would be the purpose of us to come to that meeting if it is already approved?
It has not already been approved. What's happened is the CDC is recommending that it now go to full council so that the full council can then either approve or not approve. So that's an opportunity.
But you are part of the council, right?
Correct, but we can't decide for the whole council.
You already voted.
To move it.
You already know how you're going to vote.
To move it to the full council.
No. What we voted on is to move it to the full council so that the entire city council can have a hearing over this.
So you hear from us tomorrow.
You have an opportunity at that time to...
We change our mind?
I haven't made up my mind.
It depends upon what everybody says. It depends upon what letters against, what letters for, what additional facts may be out there. What we're just saying is...
This has to go to full council. Thank you. Okay.
So you said 2 weeks. I think it's actually...
Is it 3 weeks? Maybe I'm wrong.
I think it's 3 weeks.
I'm sorry. I probably jumped up, but 3 weeks.
The 26th.
So 26th. The fourth Tuesday of the month.
Yeah. There we go.
And more time to write stuff.
Okay. Moving on to new items B, conditional use permit 9402 Villa Vista Way with the property owner Savant. May I have a staff report?
Sure. The property owner for 9402 Villa Vista Way, currently there is an independent landscape company that's operating on the back third of the property that fronts onto Meats Avenue. And in brief, what's happening there is that's a small landscape company. What they do is they have three small trucks. They've got a shipping container, what appears to be a shipping container, where they store their landscape equipment. And at the beginning of the day, and it operates Monday through Friday from, I believe, 7 to 5 o'clock in the evening. And what happens is they arrive in their own personal vehicles, including bicycles. They park it on the site. They load up their three small work trucks with the equipment that they need, and they go out of the site. And
they exit onto Meats.
And they only exit out on Meats Avenue. And then at the end of the day, they park those three small work trucks, unload their cars or trucks of the equipment, store them in that shipping container, get in their personal vehicles, and exit the property again off of Meats Avenue. And that's pretty much, in a nutshell, what this business entails.
So what's important is that, is it Villa Vista Way? Villa Vista Way, the only way to access this is you have to go up and through the neighborhood in Orange. You cannot access it except it is back into it. It's really a weird, most people don't think it's even Villa Park.
Right.
But it's the north side of Meats Avenue. You'll see it. I mean, they've had the trucks there. We said you can't do it without a permit. So that's what we've got. Come to the council. It is operating and has operated for some time in that capacity until we caught it. So now we're bringing it forward, trying to either set guidelines and control it or say no for the council, you can't do it. So that would be up to the council.
Okay. I should have said public comment on this. Is there some public comment?
Yes, because this is a business that you are allowing to bring more trucks, more bicycles, and more work. Isn't this the jewel to
it
live
is.
Quietly? And we're getting more and more business, more and more traffic. Don't we have enough?
I believe that this has been working this way for some time. We wouldn't be, this item on this agenda is not allowing additional vehicles for this particular variance or CUP. It's the existing vehicles.
You have workers coming in and out every day, so that's not a... Don't you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I
None
do.
None of my neighbors have workers going in and out every day.
Yes.
I have big trucks parked there.
Right. I hear you.
What are you talking about?
I hear you. If you'll give me an opportunity. I hear you. I am not in favor of this non-conforming use on a residential piece of property. Even though I know it predominantly affects Meats and does not affect Villa Vista Way, and that there is a large stretch of land separating the two, I think it sets a dangerous precedent, and I'm concerned that given our base level of code enforcement, I think we do a fantastic job with the resources that we are deploying. So by no means am I trying to call into question our code enforcement, but we're primarily reactive. We're not proactive in nature. I think that this sets a dangerous precedent. I'm not in favor of a conditional use permit on this property at this time. I'm concerned about how long is this going to go on? Is this a temporary issue? I see obviously the hours of operation, 7 to 5, which is a good thing. I have some additional questions. Has this company, do they have a license to operate within our community?
If they don't, Mayor, they'll be required to have. Should the conditional use permit to allow them to operate?
That's one of the conditions of approval.
I just have serious reservations about on a residential piece of property. This is, correct me if I'm wrong, an E4 piece of property, having this type of business where it's at. I just don't think it's appropriate.
Who applied for this? The property owner?
We first actually caught them and said, this is what's going on. Mm-hmm. So we approached the owner and said, you can't continue unless you have a permit, approval. And they said, but it's up to you if you want to proceed with it. Mm-hmm. You can either cease and desist or request.
So do they sublet this property out to them, or is it
no,
their
the
business?
No, they're the owner. It's their business.
It's their business. Oh.
I'm sorry, but what is your position in the city?
I'm sorry?
What is your position in the city?
I'm a planning manager here.
You're
a consultant,
manager.
Yes.
So I would be, the only thing I would offer is we have a number of homes where private businesses are operating out of them, and we know that. Mm-hmm. So it is not an anomaly to have a business. Parking vehicles like this is an anomaly.
That's my concern.
That's the issue. One of the things that you're going to find, we're going to come to you sooner than later, is that the state has just approved a thing where they're going to allow micro kitchens, and we're going to have no approval on residential.
What's a micro kitchen?
So that would be somebody who's running the trucks.
The food trucks?
The food trucks, basically, or who cooking for them, and then stocking them, and then going out or whatever.
Because this is just an emerging issue for us anyways,
sure.
As residents would be allowed to cook from your home and provide the food or the food that you prepared to the end user directly. Mm-hmm. One of the rules that I remember, and Twee, Bill and myself went to a workshop that was hosted by the county healthcare agency. Mm-hmm. And they're of course the licensing agency for these types of uses, including food carts and that sort of thing. One of the rules is that you cannot exceed $50,000 a year for this type of business out of your home. Mm-hmm. And there's other certain requirements.
Yeah.
There was a bill that went into effect in January, but what we gathered from that meeting was that the implementation of this bill was not really clear, and so there's a rider to that. There's another bill that's working its way through the legislative process to clarify the implementation component of this bill.
And as it's worded now, we do not have the right to prohibit this happening.
Mm-hmm.
We have the right to regulate it, but not prohibit.
Mm-hmm.
So
my issue is not home-based businesses.
Yeah.
I think home-based businesses are very valuable.
Mm-hmm.
I think they allow for telecommuting, and they do reduce traffic on our roadways and pollution. My concern is that we're actually importing personnel to a residential piece of property. Again, it's got a storage container, which in and of itself, no matter how much you dress it up, how much you
mm-hmm.
hide it, it's frankly not attractive.
Mm-hmm.
It's not consistent with residential architecture that I'm aware of in Villa Park. One perhaps could paint it up and make it look pretty, but I just don't see that type of...
And as home occupations go, and this is for all cities, is that they're really limited to just utilizing one room in a home.
Right.
And that it doesn't generate more
mm-hmm.
than the normal traffic,
foot traffic
that would come in and out of a
totally
home.
Different.
Yeah. So, and that would include traffic.
Yeah.
If it's more than what it would generate for a normal household, then it would not be considered a home occupation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So at this time.
So you're recommending approval?
Well, they have the right to come to the council regardless, because they can, even if this group were to say no or we were to say no, they have the right to appeal.
Right.
And that's within their right. So they know that, and they intend to come forward to the full council. So if you guys want to take a position in opposition, we would make sure that's brought to, but they have the right to go to the full council on this.
I would like more information, actually. I would like to hear from them.
Okay.
But are you recommending approval?
Yeah, based on the conditions of approval that were included as part of this application, absent that, we wouldn't be recommending approval.
They're aware this is going on today, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
And they're not here, correct?
They're not here.
Okay, I just want to make
sure
that's, that's part of the record.
Mm-hmm.
And have all the neighbors within, say, 500 feet been notified of this?
Not yet. We are required by our ordinance to send them out 10 calendar days before the hearing, so it won't go out until next week sometimes.
Okay. I know the house immediately adjacent to it also has a very, very large lot.
Yeah.
And the homeowner is selling it. There's family illness for a very long time, and so it's something that she feels that financially is in her best interest to go a different direction. I'm sure the new homeowners that may not appreciate having such a business there. So for those reasons, I feel personally that I don't think it should go forward.
There were courtesy notice letters that were sent out to all of
them. We did send courtesy notices out to them, so I mean, that's what I mean.
Yeah, and then the property owner was able to secure letters of support from the neighbors. So.
No opposition? I know he's a very nice, kind gentleman. I have met him and his family, but I was surprised when I found out that this business was taking place. I was disappointed, candidly. I appreciate the care and concern and the fact that staff did catch this and is bringing them forward to make sure they're in compliance, and I want to commend staff for doing that. I just don't feel that this type of home-based business is appropriate in a residential community at this time.
How long have they been operating this, do you know?
You know, see, part of the problem is they parked the vehicles and you don't know.
Because they're parking them in the container?
No, they parked the vehicles at night. So we are not out there at night knowing what's parked and when the access. So if they get in at 5 o'clock and they get in, we don't know they're there.
And then there's also a windscreen.
Yes, that obstructs the view.
That obstructs the view.
So we don't know what's going on.
It's really hard to see. I mean, it's just something we noticed by chance.
Mm-hmm. Well, this kind of reminds me of the issue with the homes, you know, the VRB or
VBRO.
That kind of reminds me of, you know, with the homeowner that had the business and nobody knew until there was a problem and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of that. Mm. Where now, you know, he's been working without any problems and all of a sudden now, you know, we're noticing, which is good. But I think it needs some more clarification and more information.
So are you making a motion to have it come back to the committee, or?
Well, it's got to go to the full council anyways.
Right.
I mean, it sounds like if we say no, they're going to challenge and go to the council, right?
They are going to go because it's their business.
Right.
They're very committed to it, let me just say.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is definitely a matter that needs to be in front of the council, and we need to have representatives here. I'm disappointed that they didn't show up, but this is their business.
Yeah.
I can't.
Right.
I can't answer for why they're here or not here.
Nope,
they won't.
Well, rather than continue the matter and kick the can down the road, in a sense, on the community development committee agenda schedule, I will support your motion, if you're so willing to make it, to bring it to the full city council. But I'm going to go on record, unless something drastically changes in what I'm seeing or what I'm hearing, that I don't believe that this is an appropriate business in a residential community. So obviously I'll keep an open mind, as I do in any of my decision making, but nonetheless,
is there anything additional you would or would not want to direct them to have prepared before the, I know you talk about additional information. Is there some, is there, I mean, one way or another, we, if you want something from us, we should certainly, I want to know what you want us to bring forward.
Well, I don't know if I'm right in asking some of the things that I want.
Well,
I want to know why they do it this way. How long have they been doing it like this? And is it so they don't have to?
Well, I'm sure it's for, yeah, it's because it's an own, you know, they own the home. They own the property, and they don't have to go out and rent some additional space. I'm sure that's probably, you know.
And the area on Meats there, I know you're more familiar with Villa Park, frankly, than I am. But I know this particular area I've driven very, very frequently, and I'm familiar with that neighborhood and the fact that it's a little island in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of obscure. It's kind of awkward in a sense that you've got these large high voltage wires above
right.
it.
Mm-hmm.
You've got that kind of odd shaped, very large home at the corner there. And then you have these series of somewhat vacant lots that are actually extensions of the backyards of the homes in Villa Park. So it kind of looks almost like a mixed use area. But I think, me personally, from a public policy standpoint, eventually that dirt is going to become so valuable, people are going to want to do something with it. And when you have a business that's non-conforming on that, I think that there are more issues than are positives with it, personally.
Is there any way that Villa Park could benefit financially from it? It's on private property, so really we can't do anything other than a business license,
business
right?
Business license is all we'll
that's
need
about
from
it.
It.
Yeah.
And for what it's worth, that property is encumbered by SCE easements.
Mm-hmm.
They have easement trip lines, as Mayor mentioned. There is high tension wires above it. They did have to secure, I guess, a letter of support from Southern California Edison to allow them to do what they're doing currently.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a whole set of rules that are probably a lot more restrictive than our conditions of approval.
Mm-hmm.
But because of, in basically, the name of safety. They don't want them doing certain things that could compromise the safety of neighbors, their equipment, that sort of thing. So, with that said, that property, as big as it is, may be not as valuable as one would think because of all the easements that would restrict them from doing any type of development on it.
And the lack of development in neighboring areas.
Yeah, and that's why Osumi Nursery and some of the other farms
right.
there have been there for so long because the property owner probably knows that they're not going to be able to do anything other than allow
right.
This lease to continue with the nurseries.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so then I make a recommendation that it goes to full council.
I'll support that just as a matter of moving the matter.
Okay. Okay. Again, we can find out the information about how long it's been operating, but I think it's for some time. I mean, candidly,
yeah.
if it weren't for our guys driving out and saying, what's going on here?
Right.
Why are those trucks there?
Oh, kudos
I mean,
staff.
See, typically, if a truck is here or there, you might say, well, it's construction, so you they'll say, well, you know, but it's on a regular basis. He was noticing, like, okay, this is week to week. This is construction would have been done by now or whatever.
Right.
So at that point, he contacted the owner, and that's when the owner said, you can't do this. We had a discussion with that when he first found out, when Bill came back and said, you know, we got a business running there. We need to either regulate or say no.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so what, you know, from our perspective, it's been operating, so we wanted the very minimum to regulate it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So we'll do that. Bring it forward.
Okay.
Third item, see administrative.
Again, we can certainly invite them, but
if they don't show,
it's their decision.
Yeah.
It's not ours, and
absolutely.
Whatever. And again, they were invited today, so
that's all you can do.
We'll leave that as it is. It speaks for itself.
Indeed.
see administrative wireless telecommunications facility permit. Give the staff report on that.
So this is. We've had, Mayor was here for two previous small cell facilities in 2018. Since that time, city staff crafted, because at that point in time, we didn't have a wireless telecommunications facilities ordinance. So city staff drafted one up, and so this is the first request and application that we're reviewing against this wireless telecommunications facilities ordinance. And there is a provision in there that we could move along administratively these small cell facilities that qualify for small cell facilities. And that's just, and especially in the public right-of-way. Mm-hmm. This particular, the address 18841 Taft Avenue is the nearest address, physical address, to where this pole is located. And it's actually located on Darren,
right.
Darren Circle. And it's up against a garage, I believe a garage structure that's right up against, and I think that garage was probably approved sometime back where the development standards were a little less because there's no setback whatsoever. Mm-hmm.
So
it's up against the building.
I apologize. Mm-hmm. Is that city land, though, where the pole is that city
property?
That's
in the public right of way, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but we don't own the pole.
SCE does, right?
It's owned by SCE. And AT&T, as I understand it, AT&T leases space from that pole from SCE.
So can I ask a dumb question? So if we don't own the pole, then, and I'm just trying, devil's advocate here, mm-hmm. then are they asking our permission just as kind of a courtesy because they could do it anyways?
Yeah, the way the code is, the new code is written is we can approve it administratively, but in talking with Steve, we want to be very cautious to go through this vetting process, even though as written, Steve or myself have the authority to approve these things as long as it qualifies as a small cell facility.
Because we don't own the pole.
We don't own the pole.
And they can do what they want technically, so probably they have rights here.
Yeah.
That we need to be cognizant of. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing is, from a visibility perspective, mm-hmm. we're bringing it forward. Again, like Ray's point was that the council granted authority when there's, you know, if, you know, so in right of way, what we're doing is saying it has to live within our development stand guidelines, mm-hmm. and it has to comply with the guidelines that we set forth in those, in the ordinance. Mm-hmm. And this is consistent with the ordinance. So, but as far as just from a visibility perspective, we're putting it out here, letting you know. This is not something that needs to go to council. It probably won't go to council.
Yeah.
But we need to at least have the CDC know that it's there. Yeah. Again, it's an existing pole. They'll probably remove the existing pole, put a new one in, which they have every right to do. Mm-hmm. But what we can do is say it's going to look like a certain kind of configuration, or it's going to have those certain development standards that we have. So that's basically what we're telling you is, we're alerting you, this is here.
Heads up.
Heads up.
Yeah,
and it's in a residential area, which is the other issue I had. Mm. We can't stop it, but we can certainly kind of regulate it.
And set conditions for it.
Well, those are conditions are already set in our development rights.
Okay.
In our agreement. So
yeah,
that
yeah.
was our development standards that we set forth in the ordinance.
So it sounds like how we handle this will determine whether or not they continue in the future of kind of, you know, asking permission versus just doing it, right?
No, I think they've, mm-hmm. the, yeah. yeah, I think you're right, but at the same time, most of the entities, Edison, AT&T, or whatever, are working with the cities because they recognize okay. that other cities talk to other cities, et cetera. So we don't own as many poles as some other cities do, but by all means, if somebody just jams something in on us, I'm going to say something to Placentia city manager and say,
right.
or Irvine
it's
or whoever.
It's just a nice way to
they don't want political backlash.
Yes,
right.
Correct.
Okay.
But we're advising you because from a visibility standpoint, it is not. It's something that's been reviewed, mm-hmm. and we believe it complies with the ordinance. Mm-hmm.
So is there even a recommendation that we have to give?
No, it's an advisory type of thing, so I think it's an administrative advisory.
Yeah, the only thing that they would need to get from the city, because it's in the public right-of-way, is an encroachment permit. And as Steve alluded to, and I learned this last Friday that prior to Friday, last Friday, they were just going to use the existing 42-foot 10-inch pole, mm-hmm. Attached the there's like a horizontal arm that comes off of it 3 feet, and then there'll hang an antenna pole, and then there's these two boxes that they will mount onto the pole. The applicant came and spoke to me briefly and said that their engineer said, no, we're going to have to what they call drop and swap the pole. Mm-hmm. It'll be a new wooden pole at the same height, same location, same equipment. But they were forthright in telling at least, yeah, that's the kind of work that we need to do. I also wrote, and a lot of cities do this, I also wrote a denial letter for a request to have a meter pedestal. And so they're compliant with that. What they're going to do is just vault whatever equipment they need.
Kind of like what they did on, it was a Ville Park Road that they had one.
Yeah, so all of the three, Mayor, that you had the opportunity to look at, those all got denial letters from us.
Consistent with this one, so.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So we have, obviously because of all the above ground poles that we have in Ville Park, this is not the first and not the last. We're going to have more of these pretty much heavily.
As a matter of fact, there's another one that just came in. It's going to be on Ville Park Road.
Yeah, so they have the right to move forward on this. But
do we get any kind of revenue from that?
Not unless we own the pole.
Unless we own it, yeah.
SCE probably does.
No. Yes, they do. I'm sure they do. It's whatever that dollar amount is. I don't know what the going rate is on pole access, but the industry, the cell tower, the Verizon, AT&T, are, you know, as they try to increase and improve coverage with the various new features, they're hitting these poles. And if, you know, since we are underground, not undergrounded, and the poles above, it's going to happen pretty regularly.
Okay.
And just for the record, today I spoke with a Cindy Halbach, and she was calling on behalf of her mom about this proposed small cell facility, and she just wanted to get to, I think she understood that it's, you know, it's something that's regulated by the FCC. I think she knew more about this than I did. But she understood, and she just wanted to get some information from the horse's mouth so that she can convey it to her mom, who I believe lives at this address.
One of the things that's come up more and more is the FCC is taking more and more control away from the cities.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So they could sort of, at some point here, the way some of these regulations are coming out, they could totally remove the city's ability to negate our ordinances.
For instance, they are only giving us a certain amount of days to turn these things around with comments.
90 days, isn't it?
Well, that's the shot clock rule.
Okay.
That's good. But initially when it's submitted, they only give us 30 days to send comments back.
If you don't respond in 30 days, it's approved.
Yeah, and then the shot clock rule, and they have different shot clocks for different types of projects, 60-day, 90-day, 120, 180 days. And if you miss that...
you're done.
Yeah, you're pretty much SOL.
Even though this is going forward, does this qualify under the 30-day?
We've met our time frame on this one, yes.
Okay.
And we'll meet the time frames because we're doing what we can.
Right.
It's much tougher for a larger city that has multiple poles and things like that. That's a huge problem.
Right.
Okay.
And they know that. I mean, they know you're not going to get to administratively. We're a small city, and it's one of the advantages of being more nimble, because Ray can get right on it, knows the shot clock, et cetera.
I try to anyway.
Yeah, but some of these large cities, by the time it gets processed and recognized, they're done.
Yeah.
And now they're losing control.
And that's part of the reason why it didn't cost the city any money to bring on XG Communities, they kind of help city staff.
They negotiate with us. Remember, you recall that they basically negotiate on our behalf on those, so that they know what's going, the business standards, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So we were, and to our credit, we were one of the first cities in the county that had a cell tower ordinance, basically, that was approved. And we were, you know, we're ahead of Irvine, we're ahead of many of the other cities. And that was candidly the prior council that asked for it when that originally came up, that they wouldn't approve anything until they saw an ordinance in place. So that's what we did, a plan and approval with guidelines. So we're in a very good, we're as good a position as we can be, but like the mayor's pointed out, we don't have certain authority to do some things. I mean, we're not going to stop, and they view this, the cell industry, the cell phone industry, this is their business. They make money by increasing coverage and speeding up. And you see that all the time on TV, how they got more coverage areas and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
It was just 2 years ago that you couldn't get coverage in certain parts of Villa Park, and now you're getting that because of them. Anyway, that's...
And if anybody asks why that particular location, they're not to get too techy, but, and I don't know much about it, but there's this thing called a propagation map.
Right.
And, yeah, and it shows, it has a, it's really colorful. My 14-year-old daughter likes it because it's got a lot of colors. It looks like a watercolor piece of art. But anyways, it basically shows coverage gaps in areas that are not colored, and then, you know, and it's concentric. Ring theory, if you will, the more coverage, the darker the color, if you will. And that particular location, it was nothing there in terms of signal to receive or to send. So it was for that reason that they selected that particular location. And that pole was available.
So you really get a sort of an interesting dynamic going on. I share this with you. We do get people calling us, residents, saying, I get terrible coverage here in Villa Park. What can you do to improve it?
Sure.
This improves it, but it has the dynamic of creating a unsightly pole. So we'd really do. I mean, I can guarantee you a week doesn't go by when somebody's calling complaining about coverage in Villa Park. I'm driving, I have to drop my call in Villa Park or whatever. And I think you, particularly up in that northern area, you see it a lot or hear it a lot. I'm going through a bad area, I'm going to lose your call or whatever. And residents will complain about that. But the downside is, to remedy that, they're putting in these poles. So
center near Santiago, it can be troublesome at times.
It's a dead area.
For whatever reason, it makes no logical sense. I think there may be some SCE lines that's creating some sort of electromagnetic interference. I don't quite understand.
Well, Verizon, as a point of reference, Verizon has better coverage than AT&T. If you're getting cell coverage in Villa Park, you'd deal with Verizon.
Right.
So that's just
Crawford
sort of,
Canyon's pretty terrible too.
Yeah.
So, but that's outside the state. Thank you very much for that.
Last item in number 3, municipal code amendment on garage door height.
This was then Mayor Kulik at the time had requested, as like we saw today, height limitations were changed, that he'd like to see a revised ordinance because typically he felt that garage heights were exceeding that, and they were coming in for CUPs, and it's just burdening because they're all getting approved, and there's a precedent after precedent in Villa Park. So he asked that we go back and redo the look at the ordinance to say that it expands the right to do it and to raise the height, and it would also sort of develop some development guidelines.
The main component to this is just removing the requirements to go through a conditional use permit process. And there's right now the code says anything, a garage door that's 8 feet or more requires a conditional use permit. And as we alluded earlier today, the standard seems to be 8 feet on up now, as opposed to what it was before, like seven and a half. There's been a handful of folks that wanted to go through the process. We did quite a bit of them in 2018. There was also a handful of folks that came to the counter that says, what? I've got to pay what? I've got to do what? We'll just stick to 7 feet, 11 inches and not bother with having to go through a CUP and run the risk of getting it denied and losing our fee, which is, I think, $1,800 to file a conditional use permit. So that part was eliminated, proposed to be eliminated, but I've included a new section under performance standards in residential zones that just provides a set of minimum design standards for garage doors or more. So we still do have control as far as what they look like.
Is there a public comment? Would you like to comment? Would you state your name again, too?
Sergio. E-R-G-I-O Stone, S-T-O-N.
Sergio Stone.
11 States Drive.
Okay, thank you.
This is another point that I find applicable. Why to allow people to have more garage, more
walls around it. What is next? A garage door so you can have a factory inside? How tall is it going to be? 21 feet? What if somebody has a yacht with a mast? Does it have to come to the city hall? I think they should. We should try to keep us a small city, not an industrial site. What if somebody comes for a store or a facility? Is that what they're doing? Is that right? Especially if you can have 20-foot high garage opening to put all the stuff inside.
Well, I don't think we've approved any 20-foot high garage.
We don't know. They say here it says no limit. What is that mean? 21 foot?
Where does it say no limit?
I think what he's saying is or more.
Or
right.
More.
Yeah.
30 feet?
Yeah.
50.
Well, there's a maximum height for structures.
It won't be that tall because the height of the garage is predicated on the code's requirement. The maximum for any building height in residential is 30 feet with an average of 27 feet. So you can't go 50 feet.
Okay, so a garage 27 doesn't need your approval.
I can't approve it.
No, you don't have to.
I don't, but if someone were to propose a home at that level or at that height, I can't deny it.
So you won't be able to deny the garage door either?
No, if it's within the requirements of the code,
So that's the discussion that the mayor, former mayor had asked that be brought back for consideration by the full council because this is a very prevalent it's not an anomaly to have garage doors
right
there, so
I personally I kind of see two issues here and forgive me if I didn't mean to interrupt you did you have additional?
I'll wait.
Okay, thank you. I see there are two issues here. I see his concerns, the propagation of RV garages ad nauseum at any insane height. I think if they're done with an architect's keen eye rather than a draftsman or draftsperson or a contractor, I think there's a significant chance it could be blended into the overall frontage of the home so that it's not obtrusive to the eye. It's when there's that lack of professional expertise in design that things go off the tracks. We've seen at least, me personally, there's at least one example in Villa Park that I am shocked was ever approved. And frankly, there's a few others that are very tastefully done. be that as it may, I see another issue here. I see garage heights. I think it's important to understand the changing nature of our vehicles. They have gotten slightly taller. They have gotten slightly bigger. We've gone from 3-car to a 4-car garage as a new standard. And overall garage heights have gone up a little bit. How they're manufactured, what's out there in the industry. So I would bifurcate these two issues, me personally, in the policy. I would have garage door heights not to exceed, say, whatever the industry standards are. Let's say 9 feet. Let's see 8.5 feet. That's our new standard, or 10 feet and under. And that does not need approval. But if you put an RV garage in, that should be that because it's, in a sense, could be such an obtrusive building if it's not designed well going forward. I think that an architect's stamp, an architect's design is really important to allay some of the fears that our residents may have. And I think we may have a different tone in our CDC hearings and I think in our council meetings. And I think that you might have to deal with. So I think it's a win-win for everybody if we have it that way. Me personally. And frankly, since I'm not the person who requested it, maybe Councilmember Colicott should continue and go back to him and let him weigh in on it.
Yeah, this is a first draft on the request that he did. So I this is a work in progress, and I feel really at a loss, and I don't want to speak for him and do a disservice. He was the one that requested it, and probably would make sense that it come back to CDC with sort of we can check with him and things or whatever. But it might make sense, but from. And I don't want to speak for him, so I'll just leave it at that.
Sure.
Because he is the one that asked for it to be proposed because where it is come through, he couldn't recall a single instance where we didn't, the council didn't approve him when he didn't come forward. Mm. So somebody's paying an additional expense of
$1,800
for a CUP that gets approved. And that's sort of like adds to the cost of a development or things like that. So I think, and he told me, he and I have had conversations, he did talk about tasteful, you know, architecture that fits in with the architecture. But I think the other thing he said is these are so prevalent in Villa Park anymore, the height changes, that it is no longer the anomaly. It's becoming more almost the norm. To, if you're building a new house, that it becomes an amenity that, oh, yeah, it's got an RV garage already or whatever. So, I, again, I don't want to speak for him, and it probably makes sense that it does come back for his perspective. But when we pulled this together, it was sort of responding to him, and we didn't know he was going to be here or not. And when we first pulled it, we're drafting it. But we're trying to be responsive.
Well, I understand Mr. Stone's concern, but I also have to say that I think one of the reasons why residents like Villa Park so much is because there's not a homeowner's who is telling the homeowner what they can and can't do. Mm-hmm. And each home has each individual taste, and whether you might find that it's tasteful or not tasteful, as long as it fits in the code. But where I thought we couldn't really control design. I thought that was something where...
Right, and I don't think we can, and I don't think we should. I don't think it should be an architectural review board. I don't think it should be anything along those lines. But I think if you have the credentials of a professional architect, you have at least a minimum of taste that sets forth, or I should say that allays some of the fears that some residents may have. Because candidly, I've seen in recent projects where a well-respected, well-known local contractor was used, and his seal of approval was good enough for the residents. Well, candidly, I think when all is said and done, things could have been done a little differently, and it may have made it more pleasing to the eye. And not just my eye, but the eye of the homeowners themselves when they see the project complete, and the rest of the neighbors. And I think we can truly mitigate some of those concerns by having that professional expertise.
Real quick, we can, the council can impose design guidelines, very specific. They can require architectural approval. They can do whatever they want to. Villa Park has historically not done that. So I think that's sort of, you know, what, you know, that's sort of the message we've received from council is don't, we are not a design review board.
Right. Nor
so so Ray doesn't act as a design review board as long as it's within the generalized guidelines.
That's what I always thought too.
Yeah, so we do have a set of design guidelines, and we did bring it before council last year. But it was decided not to codify it as part of the municipal code, but rather just have it as
available for reference.
Yeah, for reference, so that we can, you know, draw from it should the applicant or the architect say, does the city have any design guidelines?
But you certainly have the ability to require architectural approval or whatever. You know, the council has the authority to do whatever they want to.
May I ask a question about, so if people are not requesting CUPs for 8 feet, what's the next height that they're asking?
Under 8 feet.
Really?
They'll push the framing up to 11.7.
7.11?
Yeah, I've been told that square in my face. Well, we're not going
to
do it.
So let's so if the council were to say, all right, 8 feet or lower doesn't require a CUP, but anything, because this is, so anything above 8.1, how many of those do you think we would get, including RVs?
Probably not a whole lot. Or I take that back, probably a lot.
I was going to say probably a lot.
Probably a lot, yeah.
Why? Because people are going bigger than
cars
8?
Cars are bigger.
Yeah, cars are taller.
You have minivans now, the Sprinter vans that
Sprinter
are very popular.
Are more and more popular.
Yeah, those kinds of things. So
SUV.
Trust me when I tell you that.
But if the 8 feet is what's average right now, right? Is that what we're hearing?
Right.
That's with a Sprinter van or no?
It's taller.
Questionable when you start putting all this stuff on top.
Yeah, you've got the antennas.
Well, I guess what I'm concerned is, sorry, maybe I'm being greedy, but I enjoy the revenue that Villa Park gets, but I also don't want to make it an unnecessary, you know, wasteful for the homeowner. Mm-hmm. There has to be a happy medium somewhere where we could right. still be able to profit.
Well, from a revenue standpoint, if that's a concern, I think one less hurdle in development will reap benefits in increased development. And when there's necessarily significant hurdles for more moderate remodeling projects or less obtrusive remodeling projects, RV garage is a big deal. Let's not mince words on that one. I think everybody in this room agrees that they're a big deal. Mm-hmm. If they're done right, they can be different. People can have different opinions, but they can look relatively decent. However, we have that house, I believe, on Mesa that has a 10-foot garage. But from the street, it was not visible or minimally visible. It looked like a regular height garage.
Because of the grade differential.
Correct. So, and they're building an entire new house. I mean, from the dirt up. So I don't know if necessarily this type of fee is in our best interest in that project, because what if that is one irritant that drives? I doubt it would be. I highly doubt it would be. But why have that in there? And or if somebody knocks down the garage, they just want to have a detached garage in the back of the house, and they want to raise it from 7'6" to 8'6", so they can get a slightly taller vehicle in there. Tearing down a garage in the backyard, not a big deal. Not going to be a big deal, financially or otherwise. You start throwing in $1,800 fees on it, becomes a bit more of an issue. I think that's the argument, just a counterbalance the argument. But I understand paying for staff time and costs, what have you.
But if you made it 9 feet?
I think, yeah, could. I mean, that, I rely upon staff to provide what the industry is saying.
I think my only concern about, you know, you're not going to get vehicles are changing, and the mayor can probably answer this better, but over time, vehicles are changing size based on what's available and whatnot. You know, the industry standard has changed a lot since the, you know, the smog requirements change, all of that stuff. So typically in the past, you couldn't get away with a larger vehicle, you know, the average couldn't, you know, but now they've become more efficient engines, and now they've got less smog, et cetera. So now bigger vehicles are more common. You're going to see a shift to electric vehicles. What does that mean? I don't know. Where does the auto industry go from here? I don't know. So you're not going to get away. This is going to have to somehow, you know, down the road, you may end up having to change this anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, very candidly, you may have to change this. And you know, I mean, probably years ago, you never saw Sprinter vans out there. No. Now they're like the norm out there. Yes. At times you go anywhere,
you see,
you know,
loads of personal individuals. It used to be businesses.
RVs used to be smaller, and now the trailers you pulled it, you know, if you recall back early on. Now they're the bigger vehicles that are self-enclosed and much taller, and they've got every, you know, amenity on there. So I think it's the industry and how it's going to change. So you're not going to get a one-size-fits-all for, you know, 5 years from now, we may say, well, this doesn't work anymore.
Right.
So I think we're going to have to recognize that, and you sort of decide this is the philosophy you want to have as a general rule, whether it be 8 feet, 7 feet, whatever. I mean, you're not going to find a magic that's going to be a cutoff.
I understand.
But I want to thank you for your time that you put in on this. I think it's a good start, but I think it needs to be fleshed out more, and I would be remiss if I didn't give the requesting individual the opportunity to have input on this. And I really do think there are two different bifurcated issues.
So do you want to make a motion when it comes back?
Please.
You had public comment before?
I beg your pardon. I'm sorry.
My point again here is that as residents, we're losing control of our city. The more you allow business, construction, parking lots, the least Villa Park remains Villa Park. So you say, if you want to have a taller garage, pay it. If you don't, have an 8-figure. Don't change the neighborhood. Don't you use a city and losing control of the city to the federal government, to the state regulation. We are losing control to you guys. If you keep changing the regulation to keep Villa Park what it is.
Well, you know, we do get tax revenue from property taxes, and when people improve their homes, that increases the property tax, which means more revenue for Villa Park.
Yeah,
So allowing people to make changes to their homes actually benefits Villa Park and what then we can offer back. But I hear what you're saying. And there has to be a happy medium somewhere.
When are we going to have the first apartment building?
Well, not if we could.
Not in our lifetime, we hope.
Well, I don't think anybody here.
Excuse me, sir. I don't approve them. These projects go before city council.
Yeah,
I'm advisory to city council.
You have the paper there and you change everybody's mind.
No, I think what the thing is, the city of Huntington Beach is being sued because they won't allow development. They're being sued by the state. The current governor has sued, and in fact, there's an article in the Register that said a number of other cities will be sued, and he's sort of told them, you're online, mm-hmm. I'm going to sue you. I'm going to use the state attorney general, sue you city by city. He met with those six cities that weren't in compliance and said, you're next. He flat out said, you're going to be next, because this affordable housing issue, the governor believes it's an important issue for him. I just want to share that. That's coming, that you see this.
I think it's very rare, as the mayor and as a fellow council person, that I can say in a 5-0 vote, we would all vote against an apartment building in Villa Park. We would all vote unless we were mandated by state law. The only time that we would ever even think about that is if the federal government or the state government, by either fear of lawsuit or imprisonment, says, you shall do this. And that's what is going on with Huntington Beach. There may be some other political issues, but nonetheless, you have people that do respect single-family residences, that do respect the historic nature of what this community is, that frankly take the historic nature, the agricultural nature, into the designs of remodels of their homes, that understand that this was a community that was brought forth in harvesting citrus products did not have your typical grid type of, had an individual and unique character to it, and respect and understand that. And I think this is just, we're trying to evolve with the time, but not surrender our identity and still keep it the hidden jewel. We do have to evolve, but at a micro level, and that's what we're trying to do. We're just trying to be reasonable and work with everybody, hear everybody out, because I think you've made some great points today. And you've heard me support, at least with one of these issues, very vocally, my adamant disdain for any type of small business that is beyond a one-bedroom type of business, that is bringing business to the home and vehicular traffic and a whole host of other things that, frankly, are not in keeping with what I believe a home-based business should be. So please understand that. And Mr. Pasqua works as a staff member, he's a consultant for our city, and he has no vested interest in bringing an apartment building here. He understands the community, he understands it quite well, and he's trying to defend what is important to you. And so does obviously Mr. Franks. Thank you. I apologize.
Mr. Stone, I wanted to add on to that as well, that our city staff, including our city planner, does not tell us how to vote or tell us what we should do. We rely on his recommendation, but that doesn't mean that the whole council is going to agree or disagree. So please realize that even though we refer or defer to him to give us input, that's what we've hired him to do. So he is an individual that does not control the council.
But we do thank you for your comments.
Is there anything else that you would like to?
Thank you for the time, for listening. Mm-hmm.
Well, we appreciate you being here.
The meeting will get real shorter here because, unfortunately, the problem of being small-staffed and short and nimble, short-staffed and nimble, is that we have few people that do things. So Bill Tarrin has been down with the flu since last week, mm-hmm. and was gone Friday and now today. So he's unable to. He's the one that provides the updates on both the code enforcement issue and the significant development projects. Mm-hmm. So I talked to him on the phone. We were dealing with another issue, and he barely could. He's hoarse and terrible. So he couldn't get A and B done. Item number C, the street maintenance project. I need to somehow have more influence with the weather, because we're about 4 weeks behind with the heaviest rainstorm, heaviest February we've had in I don't know how many years.
Yeah.
We are now, so you know, 3 inches above the season total norm, and we still have another month of the rainy season with a big storm coming in Thursday and then another one next week. So we're losing weeks at a time, so we're about 4 weeks behind our rainy day schedule. So I was talking to the city manager of Yorba Linda, and he's got a like project on something he's behind. And he says, you know, I said, probably our fault for starting in the rainy season. He goes, well, last year we'd be done by now. We wouldn't have had a problem because this project would have been done.
Yep.
So the street maintenance project is running about a month behind, and the mayor can directly attest because he's got sandbags lining the street because there's so much rain and water coming down. You lose time when the ground is saturated. They're not going to put cement down and saturate it.
Well, and honestly, I think most people, I personally am happy to see the rain, so it doesn't bother me.
Maybe,
but I don't have sandbags outside.
No,
he actually did go down and help his neighbor across the street pull sandbags, and we know there's an issue we're trying to figure, but we can't get to it because it just rains.
I think people understand that.
Yeah.
Especially when they look and see the hills are beautiful green with the yellow
and
flowers and
really
snow
nice.
And yeah.
So
okay.
Can I add one more thing?
Sure.
One thing that I was just reminded of is that we would need to file our annual progress report for the housing element. And so that is due at the State Department of Housing and Community Development on April 1st. So in order to meet that drop dead date, we'll be bringing that under consent calendar. It's just a formality to let City Council know that
it's a statistical report of what we've done over the things. So we're required and to do that, and that's part of the requirement for us for having a housing element in compliance. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a housing element in compliance, you cannot issue building permits.
Right.
Which
and that's
is
one
a
of the
huge
things,
problem if we would get into that.
That's one of the things that were mentioned in that register article on cities. And it's I can't begin to tell you how happy I am that I'm that the city of Villa Park is not mentioned in that article. We worked long and hard to get that thing through, and it's a challenge. It's really a challenge for the city of Villa Park because we really don't have any land other than following the guidelines and rules that the state sets for at least zoning property and providing the opportunity to provide affordable housing in the city.
So we'll have that on the March 26th agenda, and that's just an update, but we'll have it on there for.
We're hoping to have John Douglas, who's our housing element consultant. He's has a great relationship with the HCD, hopefully. And then the reason why, more than anything, I want him to come down and speak to council directly is because he's had a thumb on the pulse of what's happening at HCD. He also has client cities. I don't know if I'm supposed to tell you this, but he has six client cities in Orange County that he's also working with to get their housing element into compliance. So he's a busy guy.
I'm sure he is.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if there's nothing else,
anything
then
further for us?
Any last comments?
No. Thank you.
Meeting's over. Thank you, Mr.